I don't know. I'm hearing some things about in Kilharry now that are more on the positive side. So that's the other thing I'm sort of interested in at Pat's camp. Obviously, there's a whole thing that needs to shake out there. Is it going to be Gordon? Are we going to have to rely on the rookie? You and I both, I think, more than most, value Dorsett as a piece in that puzzle.
Let me tell you something. He is not getting talked about a lot, particularly in fantasy football circles. But I mean, he's the most right now. He's the most tenured receiver they have with Edelman on the sidelines, and he was good at the end of the year. I mean, he was big in the playoffs. I just rewatched the AFC Championship game last year. He had a nice touchdown. Brady's trust level seemed to increase, you know, incrementally week to week. And, you know, he's a burner. People forget he was a first-round pick for the Colts in 18 or 17, you know. So
you can say what you want about Dorsett. I mean, the guy can separate.
Right.
If you don't think Philip Dorsett can separate, I don't know what you're watching. But he's a pretty good playmaker. He can make plays on the football. He's underrated. He really is. And, you know, I think the Patriots just need this thing to sort of gel. Like, who's it going to be? Let's get them together. Let's gel this thing a little bit. You know Edelman's going to be locked in.
Yep.
And boy, I mean, he's a tricky player this year. I'm having trouble sort of at the bottom of round three, early round four, like making heavy picks that I really feel good about in that zone when I've got a 10, 11, 12 draft position. And Edelman's one of the people I'm really looking at. You're like, you know what? I can feel pretty good about him down here. But the thing is, I'm always drafting with that long view of I want to win week 16, and Edelman's not a guy you can count on for 16 weeks.
I think he's got a 110 catch season he's looking at. I mean,
if he plays 16 weeks, I agree, but I think the odds on that are less than 50-50. I mean, they are. The history tells you. You would be silly to think he's going to play 16 games and to be confident in it.
You can't bank on it.
No way. No, I mean, come on. You can't. No way. So my thing on him is I look at the Pats' early schedule, and I'm like, man, this guy could really go off. Weeks 1, 2, 3, 4.
To light it up early, yeah.
Yeah. So if I'm in a league where there's active trading, I'm feeling like, you know what, bottom of round 3, beginning of round 4, full PPR, take Edelman, ride the wave early on, and then before the volume catches up to him, move him. Like, I sort of feel like that might not be a bad way to play it. And hey, if you have a lot of faith in the player and you think he can handle high volume over 16 games, you keep him. But, you know, it's interesting with him. I think his floor is better if they have one of these other big weapons, because I think volume is dangerous for Edelman because he plays so hard. He's constantly putting his body in the
way. Yeah, he just won't quit. He won't quit on any play.
I mean, right. I'm not trying to say this guy's soft. In fact,
no, he's
soft might help him a little bit.
He's the exact opposite of that. He'll go until, right. I mean, his body will spontaneously combust on the field before he ever ducks out of bounds.
He's going to end like a Spinal Tap drummer. But he's just going to disappear on the field. But, you know.
So tough.
In some ways, I like his chances of playing the whole season better if there's a guy like Gordon around to take some of the volume away. Because we've seen it when Gronk's not there, when there is no other alpha target, Brady just starts peppering Edelman.
Oh, he'll
it's
get
like every play.
Yeah, he'll get 15, 16 targets. He'll go after him. Yeah, right.
And I don't know how sustainable he is at that. He's not Welker where he just keeps getting up. You know,
Although he does. The thing about Edelman is when he gets, I mean, no matter how he's feeling, he gets up. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's
walked
around.
It's not a question of toughness. Yeah. Eventually something breaks.
Right.
I'm definitely starting to warm up to him in that sort of 35 to 40 area of the draft board.
Yeah, like third or fourth round, right in there.
Third, early fourth.
Yeah. I'm with you.
That's the area of the draft that I'm currently. When I get into that area, if everybody drafted well, I'm grasping a little bit.
The funny thing, go ahead.
There's like 10 players there that all feel the same, and that's the thing you hate when you're in a straight draft, is to have to pick a player when you're like, man, I've got 5 and 7 guys that I really like here. You know, you like to have a more defined choice, and that elite tier usually runs out somewhere around pick 34 for me if people are drafting well. So. You know, I'm grinding those players right now, trying to figure out who I really love in that area.
But one of the things that you said that's interesting there is, like, if you just talking about Edelman for a minute, if you think that there's a probability, and there is, it's at least a strong possibility that, you know, he might not last the full season, then what actually plays in his favor is you got, you know, Gordon applying for reinstatement yesterday. Maybe he comes back. Maybe never comes back, okay? But hypothetically, if he gets reinstated, it could be down the line. You also have potentially why he was drafted long term, an alpha number one, maybe with N'Keal Harry. But what I'm saying
you're
is
talking about how Gordon could come in and sort of dovetail with Edelman if Edelman gets hurt, kind of thing.
And or Harry, right? I mean, so let's say, so if you're going to ride Edelman early, you know, those guys, you know, Harry might find his ground and or Gordon might come later, and then you actually get the best, you get the
so
more efficient Edelman.
You're saying in fantasy drafts, consider stacking one of those guys with an Edelman pick.
Yeah, and then I'm saying, and then on the field for the Patriots, like maybe his the 15, 16 over-targeting games, you know, that you would find without those guys lessen. You know, you get maybe he's appropriately targeted 10 to 12 and you get Harry and Gordon on the field, you might get more Edelman. You know what I'm saying?
I definitely think that it's nice that the Patriots have the potential of maybe getting a big-time player at some point during the season. That's a nice thing, but it would be nicer if they just had those guys. But yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I think that'd be Belichick talking. I think he'd want
On NFL.com yesterday, Graham Barfield, who's really, really bright, does a lot of good stuff. If you're not following Graham on Twitter, you should be. But this is directly from Graham. Over the past 6 years, Julian Edelman has averaged 11.4 targets, 7.3 receptions, 85 yards a game when Gronk missed time in the regular and postseason. Mm. In Gronk's 25 missed games, Edelman has scored double-digit PPR points 24 times.
Wow.
While never seeing fewer than 7 targets in any of those games.
Yeah.
Since Gronk joined the Patriots in 2010, Brady has averaged 4.1 fewer fantasy points, 0.4 fewer touchdowns, 37 fewer yards per game without Gronk. So his yards per attempt with Gronk is 8. Without Gronk, 6.9.
Like, yeah.
That's big stuff.
That's interesting, yeah.
So, you know.
It just tells you how
Garfield stuff,
yeah, he just operates even better with an alpha on the field.
Right. I mean, all that stuff lines up with the eye test, by the way. Like, none of that stuff is shocking, I think, to a Patriots fan.
Sure.
I think it lines up with the way we've experienced Gronk being in and out. But it's still worth noting that this is a real thing.
Yeah, no doubt. Exactly. But for like there's so much analysis in football now, particularly in fantasy football. So the analytics are interesting for that when you boil it down to a nub. But I think intuitively when you're watching the game, you kind of pick that up.
Sometimes analytics are like, wow, is that true? If that's true, I need to adjust my thinking. Sometimes it's like, yeah, I watched the game.
Proves
your
point. Right.
You know, it depends. And, you know, before we leave the Pats, let's get back to the backs for a second. I think good news on Sony. I feel better about taking him near his ADP now.
I was worried in July when we did the Scott Fishbowl, that, you know, the big 1,200-team national algorithm, you know, which is a blast. But, you know, I had him faded way down because you didn't know. But now we're getting closer, and week one of the season is Thursday.
I'm just saying, like, I feel better about him now.
Yeah.
I mean, as everybody does, obviously. Yep. And I'm with you on Damian Harris. I think I'm not sure where his ADP is really going to settle now. We'll have to sort of keep tabs on it, but I definitely think he could be a guy to nab later in your draft.
Thinking right around 100 or so, 100, 110 in that range.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where I have him right now, actually. But I have to say, in PPR, I think the back on the Patriots I want to target is White. You know, I mean, he may not be a guy you can use all the time. That's sort of the downside to him. If everybody's healthy and cranking, he can be a little risky. Mm. But in full PPR, when you look at, like, how many targets the Patriots lost, like, if no Gordon, if no Gronk, there's, like, so many open targets on this team.
Yeah.
It just feels like White is a natural sponge for at least some of them.
Yeah,
you know?
He's the dump-off guy, for sure, and he can make something happen with it.
And you know, when the Patriots are in a jam, when they're in a spot, they go to White pretty frequently.
Yeah, so, White and Edelman.
Yeah, so I just feel like White, maybe he won't be an always-on thing, but I feel like if I can get him sixth round in a PPR, I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, he's a great...
Over the course of 16 weeks, sorry.
And he's a great weekly DFS play, you know, in the right week when the matchup's there. You can actually feel it when the Patriots are going to go heavy, you know, underneath and hit the running backs.
By all means, when you do feel that, shoot me a little DM on Twitter, remind me.
Yeah.
If I haven't put it together, you can give me a tip.
The other thing I like about White, just being here for so long, you know, being, you know, born, bred, growing up here, is like I always with the Patriots like the guys you're not hearing about. You know what I mean? And like White's the one whose name I'm just not hearing a whole lot about, which to me,
we talked about him when the Patriots drafted him, if you recall. I mean, he's not a sexy kind of player. He's just good at everything.
Yeah, and a Wisconsin
game,
and a Wisconsin back, which always had a label back then too, as like not being able to make it in the NFL. So
I remember, you know, the guy I do all my film stuff with, Coach. I mean, he's sitting there telling me how good White is, and I'm going, really? I mean, I'm looking at his numbers and looking at him run. I'm like, I mean, hey, he's a good little back, but he's like, no, this guy's got something.
Mm.
Once again, Coach, knowing what he's doing.
And once again, Belichick nabbing him, right? When he was
and it makes so many times that's happened. But yeah, I mean, Belichick loves players that you don't have to constantly coach up. You know, James White's a sustainable asset. He just sort of does it the way you coach it. And there's so much value to that when you're a team like the Patriots, you know.
I think these guys
that just do their job.
I think that's why Brandon Bolden came back, and that in special teams, but like why he lasted so long before he went off to Miami. It's just, he just did the little things and did them all right. He wasn't flashy. He didn't not a big yardage gainer, but a guy when you needed some tough yards or someone needed a spell, he was reliable.
Yeah.
You know,
Bill Parcells used to say you don't want to be coaching the coaches. And the same thing goes for your veteran players. These guys who are, you know, self-sustaining, who you don't have to watch every second. There's a lot of value to that. It means you can put your attention in other places, keep the corners dusted and all that. You know, White's one of those guys.
Yep.
And the Patriots, I mean, we've done it before. We can do it again. There's a long list of these guys in Belichick's tenure.
Yep.
Long list.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to get to the quarterback a little bit. Happy birthday to Tom Brady, number 42, yesterday. And you've got an article about him coming. I don't think is it on WEI.com yet or not?
I don't think it's up yet. It'll be up, I think, today or tomorrow, probably.
Yeah, but it's an interesting take. So we all know Brady, right? But from
it's similar to my last year's take. Really, it's almost a yearly article at this point, right?
It is because
don't overpay for Brady and Patriots stuff.
Yeah, if you're playing in a local fantasy football league, Patriots are always going to be overvalued. But like, it's interesting,
right?
Brady, the older he gets and the more he continues to perform, he actually becomes a value. Where for like the first 80% of his career, he was overvalued locally. So he's a guy you can sit back and nab. I've already done it, late in the draft.
I don't think I agree necessarily with that. I mean, I think he'll still be overvalued locally. I do.
No, I'm saying in general, but yeah.
Oh, no, yeah. In general, I think here's the key thing. Look, I know that there's Patriot fans out there who want to draft Brady. I can't stop them from wanting to do it, and I can't stop them from doing it. But I can just point out that if you're not in a league with a bunch of Patriot fans, you are going to be able to wait quite a while.
Yeah.
Like in drafts, I've seen him going as QB20, QB22. So you can sit there and wait until round 10, 11, 12 and still get Brady. So if you're in one of these leagues, please, you can get your guy without hurting your team very much.
Yep.
You know, so I've been in these drafts where there's a lot of Patriot fans in the room, and yeah, Brady goes round one, Edelman goes round one, Gronkowski round one, James White goes round two. It's like, I mean, if you're a local fan, and forget Patriot fans, if you're a New York local fan, Philadelphia, no matter where you are, if you overpay for your own players,
you're going to lose.
You're going to sink your fantasy chances. And what do you really achieve by rostering your hometown fantasy players? You're rooting for these guys anyway.
That's a great point.
It's not like I'm a Patriots fan, I roster Tom Brady, and now I'm really rooting for Tom Brady. I mean, come on, you were already really rooting for Tom Brady. So, it really doesn't matter. You're going to be locked in on the Pats anyway.
And again,
as we say in the article, there are really good ways to go about rostering Patriots. You just do it on a national platform where you pay national prices, right?
Yeah.
On DraftKings every week, Brady's got a price. Wait for him to be priced well in a matchup you like, and get some Tom Brady action on a Sunday. In best ball leagues, when you sign up for a best ball league, people are scattered randomly across the country. You're not going to pay a premium to get Tom Brady, so get him in those leagues.
Yeah, just wait.
You know, get him where the price is right. Like, don't have the Patriots negatively impact your fantasy team. Don't let that happen.
Yeah, rather use them strategically. And I'd also say this, your probability of winning in fantasy is so low anyway. Don't hurt your chances even more. I mean, if you're in a 12 or 14 team league, we've talked about it, you got a 1 in 12 chance or a 1 in 14 chance. So, you got to make the most of all those picks.
And the guy who gets the local star, he gets a little bit of a chest bang on the day of the draft. Hey, I got so-and-so. But, the rest of the season, you get the laugh. The guy who drafted the good team, you're the one who actually gets to gloat. So go with the value. If Patriots fall to you, go for it. Take them. But don't reach for your hometown guys. Yeah. You're going to pay a price for it.
I would agree. All right, so we were talking last week, and we talked a lot about a lot of things, and one of the things we never really got to was the quarterback position in general. So it feels like a kind of a good time to segue.
But deepest quarterback position ever.
There's no question. I mean, there's at least 24 quarterbacks you can rely on. At least.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. I mean, the question is, how can you sort of game it to get yourself the most value and put the best team together that you can? I mean, how much time do we have in this? We got 2 minutes?
Go for a couple minutes.
Good.
Yeah, plenty of time.
This is my board. And again, the separation between the ones and the twos is very small. But let's just rip through my QB2s, okay?
Yep.
So I'm avoiding the top 12 on my board, right? Dak Prescott, Jameis Winston, Roethlisberger, Trubisky, Breeze, Rivers, Cousins, Allen, Garoppolo, Brady, Sam Darnold, and Matt Stafford. That's a pretty good group of backups,
all day. I mean, yeah, any one of those guys you can start any week.
Right, and now outside of that, so now we're into 25, 6, 7, 8, Derek Carr, Andy Dalton, Mariota, Fultz. These guys are not useless. These guys are actually startable themselves in a good matchup. So
no doubt.
There's a ton of good quarterbacks out there, and we haven't even gotten into, like, what if Washington starts Haskins? He could end up being good, too.
Absolutely. Well, he'll end up playing, you know, Case Keenum. It'll be the classic where the veteran, you know, starts out, keeps the seat warm, plays terribly enough that the rookie comes in once he starts to give the coach the indication that he gets it.
Right. Like, say you're in a 10-team league, right? You can make a compelling argument. I'm not saying that people should do this necessarily, but you can make a really compelling argument. If you're in, like, one of these 10-team leagues, you draft, like, 15 rounds, don't even draft a quarterback. Like, don't even draft one.
Hmm.
Draft zero quarterbacks, draft zero kickers, and just keep taking high upside players that might win camp battles. Because, look, even if there's 10 teams in your league, even if the other nine all take two, that only got us to 18.
Yeah, you're still...
That still leaves Cousins, Allen, Garoppolo, Brady, Darnold, Stafford. I mean...
Yeah, Carr.
Right, that's how deep it is. So, it's probably better to maybe use your last pick on a quarterback if there's somebody there who's compelling, but you cannot get shut out. It's just not possible.
Well, what you're saying in that situation, like 15 team draft, whatever, is just take as much, you know, upside at the skill positions that you need, and then when you come into week one, you just cut the one that you feel the worst about.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Is fill those roster spots at the last available moment and learn as much as you can about the guys, the high upside guys you've rostered. Then you'll know which ones to cut, which ones to keep. And again, there's nothing wrong with, say, taking a quarterback in round 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, that's fine if you get a compelling value.
Sure.
But if you don't, I mean, there's just no way to get shut out at the position in a 10-team league. Even in a 12, it's pretty hard. I mean, it's just that deep. One of the guys you
mentioned at the end of the list is actually kind of, if you were to tier him, like he was after the QB2s. One guy I got my eye on who I'm looking at late is Derek Carr, just because of the weaponry they have in Oakland. I'm, you know,
as
Gruden
long,
worries me a little bit, but like I love
as
AB.
As long as Brown's
there.
Foot checks out, I'm with you.
Yeah, what's
I'm
up with that? You. Is he's got like a foot full of blisters or something? Did you hear about that see it on Instagram? What's happening?
I don't know.
He's got the gout or something?
Look, unless it's one of those flesh-eating bacterias, I'm sure AB will be fine. He'll have the best dermatologists, I'm sure.
There's no doubt about that.
I mean, if they have to, they'll give him some. Well, actually, I guess they can't give him steroids, can they? I don't know. But I'm sure AB's gonna be fine.
And they got suspended for bad right. stuff. Be terrible.
I mean, have you ever seen Antonio Brown's workouts?
They're
insane.
Yeah.
I mean, his workouts are insane to watch. I can only imagine what it's like to do them. So he's probably been working out too hard. That's why his feet are so banged up. So
yeah, could be.
So decelerate him a little bit. I'm sure he'll be fine.
Yeah, he was.
It's
one,
not structural. It's a skin thing from what it's.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, they're hiding. They haven't said much, so it leads people to kind of speculate and wonder what's actually there.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just what you're hearing about. So not that worried.
Definitely something to stay on top of. Stay on top of it, but. I think I'm not worried about his skin if it's just a skin thing.
All right. Good yummy stuff before we break. So we're going to break. We're going to come back. Talk more. Talk more Patriots. Talk more quarterbacks and more football, fantasy football in general. Sports Radio, WEEI. Gotta let it ride a little bit. All right, Jim Hack and Pete Davidson back. Fantasy Football Hour, talking football, talking a little bit of everything. And before the break, we were talking most disgustingly about Antonio Brown's feet, which hopefully don't become a topic. But we're also getting kind of into the quarterbacks. And
if Rex Ryan calls in, tell him we don't want to talk to him.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want it. He's blocked. But, you know, speaking of quarterbacks, we were talking about quarterbacks before the break and kind of just how many good ones there are now. And in terms of fantasy football, how that can impact the way that you draft and how to approach it, and some good ideas there back and forth. But one of the guys I really want to kind of talk about is Andrew Luck, who's kind of, you know, been coronated, you know, coming into, you know, well before the preseason, when you start drafting best ball and stuff, you know, around even before training camp and more like kind of post combine and a little bit before the draft, was Andrew Luck is kind of like looking at, you know, kind of slotted as the number two guy behind Mahomes. But
not on my board, he's not.
No, but he's, nope. Well, we'll get into that. But he is kind of, I'm a little concerned about what's happening with him. He's got a calf injury, which, you know, to me.
We'll find out about the calf injury. I mean, at this point, there's really no point in getting into it because we don't, you know, I don't know. It's sort of a non-story to me. We don't know enough. I just don't know anything about it. I mean, you know, they're being sort of hush-hush on it. So if you don't trust him, fade him, you know.
Yeah, I guess, but he's just like,
I don't know anything about it. You know, they're holding him back until we actually get a look at him or he's practicing. There's just, you know, it's just something to worry about, but there's nothing specific to get into. You know what I'm saying? It's a calf pull, but we haven't really seen the guy. So, I mean, if you wanted to fade Luck, I'd say, yeah, go ahead. But I'm already fading him, so this is sort of a non-story.
Well, where do you have him? I'm just curious.
Well, he's my third quarterback, but he's not a guy I'm looking at drafting. I don't think the value is going to be there. He's going to go earlier than I want to take him, even if the calf is 100%. So, you know, I like to target guys with
upside.
Yeah, I like guys who can score points with their feet. So, I mean,
I'm guessing you have Watson as in the two slot. That's my
Watson's my two. You know, Luck, Rodgers, Mayfield are my 3, 4, 5, but I'm not targeting any of them.
Yeah.
You know, I just think they're all going to be priced more than I want to pay on draft day. Really, the only guy, the guys in my QB1s that I'm actually maybe going to target are Kyler Murray, Carson Wentz if he slips far enough, Cam Newton if he slips far enough, Lamar Jackson if he slips far enough. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys I'm sort of looking at. But I don't want to reach up for any of them. I want them to fall to me.
Well, we were just saying that before the break, right? I mean, you could, if depending upon the size of the league, you could actually, if you were saying in a 15-rounder, you could actually just not draft a quarterback and just pick one up off the wire before game one.
Right. And again, that's not so much a, hey, go do that, although I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. It's just to underline that you cannot get shut out at quarterback. It can't happen. Not in a 10-team league. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you see compelling reasons to not take quarterbacks, go ahead and do it. If, you know, if great players are slipping to you, just keep holding off. You can't get shut out. And again, like I went through the QB2s just to sort of underscore, like, why am I worried about potentially not getting the QB1 I want at value? If it doesn't happen, I'll take Prescott. I'll take Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
I'm very happy taking Jameis Winston this year.
Yeah.
You know, there is no viable backup to him. He's going to play.
And they got a ton of weapons there. That's a really open offense, Tampa Bay. Well,
yeah. I mean, they have less weapons than last year, but I think that's sort of good because I think it concentrates the better weapons into the offense.
Godwin,
if that makes sense.
Yep.
You're going to see more Godwin. We're going to see more Evans. We hopefully see more O.J. Howard. These guys, I mean, O.J. Howard, probably not enough people pointing out what a complete and utter beast that guy is.
Yep.
He is insanely good. You may remember when he came out, we said, hey, this might be the next Gronk, this dude. And he might be. He really might be.
He's big and fast and get down the field.
And he's just legit hard to deal with once he's got the football in his hand. And the other thing about O.J. Howard is, unlike a lot of these tight ends who we like Ingram and Njoku, whoever, I mean, this guy can play the position all the way.
Yeah.
And he is a legit blocker. You know, he's like Hawkinson, where he can just do everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of Hawkinson, we're going to get a look at him this week here in New England.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so the Pats are, joint practicing with the Lions, and then they kick it off on Thursday night with the first preseason game. And, you know, look, it's the first preseason game, so you're going to see a lot of guys that probably aren't going to make the roster or are teetering on the roster. But it'll be good to kind of take a look at him and just get a first look at the Pats. We're all thirsting for it, particularly after, as I said at the top of the show, after the Red Sox had, you know, canceled the season last night, that it's officially football season. So it all kicks off this week, which will be a lot of fun. And I'm interested to look at Hawkins.
Quarterbacks.
Yeah.
All right. So Kyler Murray is sort of the guy that he's my elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an emotional player for me in the quarterback board right now, it's him. I have to admit, I want Kyler Murray shares this year, but I don't want to mess my team up to get them.
Mm.
So he's sort of the guy. I'm playing with fire with him because I don't want to go too early to get him. And so far, that attitude has left me with not that many shares, to be honest. I've lost him in a lot of drafts. But again, it sucks, but when I lose him, I end up getting Cam Newton.
Yes, what's wrong with that?
You know, yeah. This is not a heavy penalty to pay. So, you know, don't let that, you know, fear of missing out lead you to take, you know, Kyler Murray when you can still get a really good player at another position, you know, of scarcity. Like, I'm not going to take Kyler Murray when I can still get Robbie Anderson or Curtis Samuel or Dante Pettis.
Sure.
One
thing on Murray, when I think of Kyler Murray, it makes me think of David Johnson. I'm hoping that those two, you know, gel to the degree that they can, because Johnson's clearly the best player on the field on that team, and yet we haven't seen it in a couple of years. They haven't been able to do
Murray.
It.
Murray may be that guy very soon. We'll see. I mean, I'm very excited about Kyler Murray, but I'm open-minded to, you know, him being that small could end up being a problem. But I'm very excited about the player. His film is just, like, amazing. He does so much right as a quarterback. I mean, he's very exciting. But look, you know what's exciting me. There's one thing that's exciting me here. It's that we have a quarterback who's going to run.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a guy who can put up 100 yards on the ground on a given week. He's very much like Lamar Jackson. Truthfully, I think he might even be more elusive. But the difference between Lamar and Kyler is that Kyler is a high-end quarterback. Like, if you said Kyler Murray's never going to run for positive yardage, I think he's still an NFL quarterback.
Huh.
You know?
Whereas Jackson's got all sorts of passing problems. I mean, he's got upside for sure, but he's not a true quarterback.
If you told Lamar Jackson that he had to win from the pocket and that's the only way he could play, he's not an NFL quarterback right now.
Yep.
Maybe he could be someday, but he's not right now. Kyler Murray is right now. So, you know, to me, there's only two things to worry about with him. Is the size going to be a thing? We've never really ran this experiment before, a quarterback this small. So we're going to find some things out there. And then, you know, injury. But apart from those two factors, I mean, he's so good. His eyes are top shelf. His arm is top shelf. His athleticism is great. His feet are great. But in addition to that, his footwork is great. There's very little to worry about with this player other than him getting hurt.
Well, the funny thing is like everyone was talking about that it wasn't a good quarterback class before his measurables came out. Remember the day his measurables came out and he was like just at 6 feet and then all of a sudden he's the number one pick. Like it just jumped to him.
Right. So well, he's like, not 6 feet. I think he's below 6 feet.
Yeah, but they kind of, I don't know if they stretched him out.
I think he came in at 207.
Yeah.
He came in heavier than he was supposed to come in and that definitely helped a little bit. I'm telling you, it really, to me, none of that stuff matters. You know, yeah, he's small. No doubt he's small.
The thing that's curious to me is, like, I would be a full go on him if it was Arian still there. But with we just don't know with Cliff Kingsbury and his
full go on him for what? For fantasy?
Yeah. I'm curious about what's going to happen with the offense.
I'm going to take the other side on that. He's 5'10", is what he is tight, by the way. Arians, if they're trying to win football games, yeah, I'd rather have Arians. But for fantasy, Kingsbury is – you know, he could be like the next Chip Kelly. He may not last in the NFL that long. We don't know. But, you know, the air raid offense is going to be good for fantasy. I don't think there's any way around it, especially for the QB. He's going to throw a lot. They're going to have a lot of receivers on the field, which means there's going to be a lot of coverage downfield. There's going to be room to run.
Broken plays game. He can run on, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if Kyler Murray doesn't get hurt, I mean, his fantasy production, I mean, forget about whether they're winning games. I don't think they are going to win a lot of games. But the stats this guy could put up for fantasy is just crazy.
Mm.
Because, again, normally when we get a guy who puts up a lot of foot points, there's a significant price to pay with the passing stats.
Yeah, but he's got those.
This guy is a more advanced quarterback than Cam Newton was. A lot more. So, you know, the only price we're going to pay passing statistic-wise is just opportunity cost, meaning, well, he ran instead of throw, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously when you run, you're not throwing. There's some opportunity cost. But a lot of running quarterbacks, they're running because they're not super efficient throwers in the first place, right? Mm. This guy can just – he can go either way.
Interesting thoughts on him. So let's get we'll get more into some other quarterbacks. We'll isolate guys you can get late that we have big upside after we break. Sports Radio, WEEI. All right, welcome back. Jim and Pete talking football, fantasy football hour, closing things up before Bradfo and Wiggy jump on the studio. We're talking quarterbacks as we head into week one of the preseason. Pats, Lions kick it off on Thursday night. Joint practices all this week. Talked a little bit about Brady and the just the volume of good quarterbacks that are out there to pick through. You know, I'm kind of looking at your rankings, Pete. There's some interesting sequencing here.
Yeah. Hey, can we stop 1 second?
Yeah, go ahead.
I apologize. I was shutting you down on luck before. For just a second, I want to talk about what I was getting into there. Just right now, we just don't know. Like, we know he did this pull on his leg, right?
Yeah.
And it happened months ago, and we know that they're slowly working him in. He's not practicing, like, hard. It's like, that's good information to have. But, like, trying to open that up beyond that, I think, is just sort of like...
No, I hear you, because we don't have any news. I get
right,
it.
Right, exactly. Like, we can do the same thing with Damian Williams, with Derrick Henry, with, like, a bunch of these guys. But unless it's like A.J. Green, where we know exactly what the injury is and they've given us a timeline, we're just sort of, like, spinning our wheels and worrying. So, when we find out that there's
well,
actually...
That's my natural tendency, is to spin my wheels and worry. So that's where that comes from. That's genetic and learned behavior. What can I do?
Oh,
it's true.
When I laugh hard, you know, it's because I agree.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I've got luck in a couple of leagues, and it's like, you know, a couple of years ago, he was throwing Nerf balls. You know what I mean?
So drafted luck. Here's my thing. If for some reason they're still in this same station in 2 weeks, then maybe we start to worry.
Yeah, sure.
But calf injuries are predictable. I've actually had a bunch of them, and they heal predictable. The thing you don't want to do is be stupid with them. Because they're predictable, everything will be fine as long as you don't push too hard too soon.
Yeah.
So he's the franchise. He knows the offense. You know, the only thing they want to avoid is him doing a setback, because a setback in a calf can be 3 to 6.
Well,
so,
it finally feels like, you know, things are teed up for him there with the off. They got an offensive line. They've got good weaponry, and then this. So, and look, I have no love for the Colts. I could care less. I'm just thinking for fantasy purposes. You know, I'm looking at him and saying, geez, it'd be nice if he was just healthy and ready to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but he's not.
I think that ultimately he will be. But my thing for luck is that I'm just not that jacked on him for fantasy, in that I have to pay for him. So, you know, a quarterback who doesn't run much with an injury history, who I have to pay a lot for this year, is just not on my board. You know, he will probably be good, but I'm going to have to pay top dollar to get him, and I don't pay top dollar for quarterbacks unless they have crazy upside.
Yeah.
You know?
Some of the guys you have, you know, listed here that are the obvious ones that for mobility and getting foot points, you know, like, I mean, obviously Lamar Jackson, right? You got him at 10, which is kind of interesting. But, like, I'm looking lower down the board. Like, you get Mitch Trubisky at 16. He can move a little bit, you know?
I like Trubisky a lot. Trubisky's an excellent example of why you don't need, you know, to lean in too hard for a QB1. You can get Trubisky much later. And, like you say, he runs. And, you know, the problem with the Bears' offense for fantasy is that there's too many places to throw the ball. It's hard to count on one guy getting a lot of targets in any one game, right? But that doesn't hurt the quarterback's value at all.
Yeah, no, that's a guy you can just sit on him and watch the points rack up.
Right.
The other guy is somebody no one.
Our friend Johnny Rumford says, "Buy the syrup, not the pancakes."
Right. Yeah. I usually go the other way on that, but so we were just actually up in New Hampshire, and I got that nice, like, you know, the syrup that's like home, right out of the tree up there. You know,
love that stuff.
It's good stuff. And I hammer
you mix
some of those.
That with butter, it's just too good.
It's good times. All right. Hey, so the guy I really wanted to talk about, and I teased it last week. This is the longest tease in radio history. It's a week. But at number 20 is Josh Allen.
Wait, one more.
It's number 20 is Josh Allen. Like, why am I giddy about Josh Allen? You know what it is, I think? And we've been friends a long time, and one of the leagues we play in, you know, where the heritage team for me is Grogan's Heroes. Josh Allen reminds me of a young Steve Grogan with the legs and the booming arm and the inaccuracy. Yeah, I'm thinking like 1976 to 79 Grogan. That's what I see with Josh Allen, and I like
it. Was Grogan inaccurate, or was he
not
just
inaccurate?
Stupid
he just,
with the football.
He just took a lot of gambles. Like he's
right,
a classic.
Right. That's how I would define it.
Classic guy who, when he had the legs and the arm, didn't have the great decision making. When he had the great decision making, and I mean
right.
great. I mean great decision making. He didn't have the legs or the arm. So
that is so the way to describe Grogan. I remember the way he destroyed the Jets in the last third of his career.
He owned the Jets. He owned
just
the Jets.
Absolutely destroyed us. I mean, like, not like Marino, but it wasn't that far off. I mean, Grogan just had our number.
I've got a couple of videos of, like, you know, the history of the Patriots. And there's a game in 76 where Grogan rolled 53 up on him. It might have been 78. He rolled 53 on him. It's just like bombing him down the field to Stanley Morgan, like, all day long.
Oh, Stanley Morgan. There's another one. So here's my thing about Allen. There's a couple things that concern me about him. I like him as a get-out-of-the-box-well guy, Jets, Giants, Bengals, early. I like that.
Yeah.
But the schedule toughens up after that, Patriots, Titans, Eagles, Browns. You know, then some tough run defenses later in the season. But here's the thing I really don't like. If you're going to get involved with Allen, have a plan for the end of the year because he closes playoffs Baltimore, Pittsburgh Patriots, and I don't like
that. Yeah, that's not good. One thing I do like about him, though, is
I like him as a streamer kind of guy. I don't like him as my quarterback.
I like John Brown. He's got somebody he can throw it to down there.
I actually think the Bills receivers are one of the sort of under-the-radar places you might be able to get some production. Now, we're talking deep leagues because I don't know if I want one of Josh Allen's receivers in like a 10-team league or something.
That's
probably a little thin. But if you're playing in one of these deep leagues, a 14-teamer, a league that has deep rosters where you have multiple flexes, whatever, I think that their passing yardage is going to be very concentrated in their receivers. Their tight ends are already banged up. Their best tight end's a rookie who's banged up. Josh Allen throwing to the running backs, not great.
Yeah, I like the three receivers. John Brown, Zay Jones, Robert Foster. Right. Those are good players.
Well, I do like the players individually, but I just think the way this offense is set up, I just think a very high percentage of their passing yards will be concentrated at the wide receiver position. So, yeah, I think Brown, Jones, Foster, these guys have some value, and maybe Beasley. If we can get Josh Allen to throw to somebody that's small.
Yeah, he just likes to chuck it. But he's a young Steve Grogan. That's why I love him.
It's hard to think of Allen throwing to Beasley and not imagine balls flying over Beasley's head. We'll have to see how that plays out.
I think you're probably right. Hey, one guy, when you mentioned, we were talking about Trubisky and you mentioned Chicago, it made me think of a guy I wanted to mention to you. So the Pats signed Cam Meredith this week.
His knees will quiet down and he can get fully healthy. You know, he's a smart, versatile receiver. He could help.
He had a big year. What was it? 16 with the Bears. It was pretty good.
It's all about the leg injuries for Cam Meredith. If he can get those legs 100% healthy, he could be very good. But he took some nasty stuff. His knee took it bad.
Yeah, he had a big decline from his heyday in Chicago to New Orleans. I think he had like a catch or two.
It's all about health.
Yeah.
It's all about health.
A worthy flyer.
It's really going to be about how he's running.
Yeah, it's a worthy flyer. I mean, they've got a lot of personnel there, you know, that
didn't
they're kind
cost
of shuffling through. Right.
Yeah, no. Yeah. He's a talented player. He's sort of in the Denario Alexander area now. Maybe not that bad, but, can he get his old athleticism back post-injury? We don't know. So he's one really, you know, beat writer buzz over the next week is sort of significant with him.
Yeah.
Because they can tell you, is he running well or is it, you know, Is he dragging that leg?
There's a couple other receivers there that are kind of vying for a position. They're probably not going to make it, but one of the guys that they keep talking about in training camp that's doing pretty well is Jacoby Myers.
I was just about to say, it's going to be the law firm guy, isn't it? You know what? He's got some appeal. I watched a fair amount of his film. He's a guy to keep an eye on.
Yep.
And definitely a guy to keep an eye on.
Yeah, we've got.
I don't see star player there.
No. He's like a deep roster guy. Yeah.
And so is Berrios.
Yeah, well, he's actually having a rough camp.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
I heard his routes were coming along a little better. I heard that his route work has improved, but, I mean, who knows?
One thing that's going to hurt him is if he can't.
We're always interested in slot guys on the Pats, though.
Yes, but that's the appeal. I mean, once they drafted him out of Miami and he looked like Edelman and Welker, everyone was all in. Like, everyone put their chips in. But the problem he looks like he's having right now is bringing in punts, and they're going to need him. You know, if you want to kind of preserve Edelman.
Talking about Dorsett doing punts. You know that there's a reason for that.
If you want to preserve Edelman, it'd be nice if they had a guy like him who can get, you know, catch every punt and be good at it.
You want Edelman returning punts in tight games in the second half.
Yes.
Important situations, but yeah, you don't want him just returning punts.
Right. So if Berrios can't get that done, he's not going to make it. That's where
I am. Might be right.
Yeah.
Might be right.
Kind of just feels like the way it's going to go.
Yeah. And again, I've heard that Dorsett's back there doing it the last couple days. So that's something to watch.
Yeah, it is. I mean, if he could excel at that, that would be great for him. It'd be great for the Patriots because he's got just lights out speed.
Yeah. I mean, I think just to your point, it seems like that could be sort of a precursor to somebody else not making it.
Yeah. Yeah. But Berrios is the guy I would look at. The guy I thought who would actually make the roster, Pete, when they signed him, but he's had a really kind of slow
DeMarius.
Goal. Demarius is on pup, but is Dontrell Inman, because he had flashed before.
Yeah, a lot of people were high on Inman.
Yeah, but he kind of came into camp and was like, yeah, I needed a job, so, you know, I signed here. And not exactly like a Belichick way to go about things. So he's been an easy target to, like, not make the team, but we'll see. I guess we'll learn more on Thursday.
I mean, you can argue that whether there is or isn't a Patriot way, but I think we can all agree that that's
that's not it.
Not it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm going to break for lunch in a little bit, and then we're out. So not a great start by him.
Yeah, I mean, at least when Cordell Patterson had that quote, it was like on the way out the door. Cordell's not stupid enough to say that, like, when he's on the team.
Yeah. Let's talk about my favorite player. So he's in Chicago now. And what do you think? We were talking about Trubisky earlier. How do you think he mixes in? Similar to what we saw here?
Patterson? Great signing by them. He's exactly the kind of player that fits in their offense. They can use him when they see a match for it, and that he can be in mothballs for a week or two when they don't. You know, he's really a great fit for them.
That's good.
And if something happens to Tariq Cohen, you can fill that role with Patterson.
Yeah.
They're totally different physically, but they can do a lot of the same things.
Yeah, we saw it last year. Yeah.
They've got him playing running back more straight up, by the way.
I love closing a show with Cordell Patterson. All right, my man. We will talk this week. We'll be back, and we'll have something to talk about after week one preseason and looking at week two, which always gets better. So Bradford, Reamer, and Wiggy coming up. Jim and Pete closing it out. Check out Pete at rotobon.com. The top 500 players are ranked and ready to go.